Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Email mytake@thetakeaway.org.
So, Daljit, you've been following all these swine flu reports and all the various numbers of suspected deaths and confirmed deaths and
yes,
where the cases have been reported.
Yes, there seems to be a lot of sort of conflicting things with the figures.
In our 24-hour cable age, there's a temptation to think of this kind of reporting as like election reporting, where there's a pile of numbers and we're going to just count them out, and the up-to-the-minute numbers represent something that's orderly. But in fact, it's not. There's all kinds
of
patchwork.
Small print.
There's patchworks of information and data collection that really it takes an epidemiologist to sort out. Joining us now is Dr. Susan Fisher-Hawk, who's an epidemiologist at the University of Texas School of Public Health. She's co-author of the book Level 4, Virus Hunters of the CDC. She was a staff member of the CDC from 1986 to 1993. Dr. Hawk, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let me ask you just a question to help me out this morning. Now, originally we were talking about 152 deaths in Mexico, but now we're saying 20 confirmed deaths, and now even more recently than that, we're saying 7 confirmed deaths in Mexico, and the number of suspected cases versus confirmed cases is also different. Explain how these discrepancies occur and how to interpret these kinds of numbers.
It depends on what we call case definition. The CDC has a definition for a case being a suspected case, a probable case, and a confirmed case. And to have a confirmed case, you have to do a special molecular test that actually detects the genome of this particular virus, the H1N1. The probable cases are known to be flu through a generic test, but we don't know which flu it is. And the suspect cases haven't got that far. I think the problem in Mexico is that they may not have even the specimens on all these patients, and only a few of them will have been tested.
Now, you're going to be doing an H1N1 test today, right? I mean, you have some samples in your lab.
Well, yes, we're just setting up to do it. The CDC has just put on their website the information needed to do this test so that people are going to be able to do it anywhere where you've got the capability.
Hmm. All right, so let's talk about how epidemiologists begin to trace the origins of an outbreak that they're calling it officially right now. We're told that it began in Mexico, or seems to have clustered first in Mexico, possibly near a swine farm, a pig farm in Oaxaca. But first of all, how would we even know that? And secondly, is it possible that that isn't even true?
Well, yeah, that's pretty speculative. Sure, a pig farm somewhere. Somewhere, and definitely in Mexico, because where the outbreak actually occurs is where it must have started, where you first see it. It's very unlikely it came from anywhere else. But, you know, the pigs are important, but they're a little bit, if you'll excuse the expression, a red herring, because this particular virus is not a pure swine virus. It's one-third human virus, one-third bird virus, and one-third pig virus. And the ability of this virus to make itself into new shapes, it kind of shuffles itself like a pack of cards with different viruses, is what causes new viruses to emerge, and that's what starts pandemics.
Hmm.
So this is quite classical, a reassortment event.
So is it important to find the origin, or is it more important to follow the mutations as they're occurring in various places around the world? And we're up to, I believe, 6 countries now. Germany was added today.
Yes, the first thing you do with an outbreak is you try to stop it, or at least mitigate it. This one's going to be very difficult to stop because the disease is so transmissible, and by the time it's been transmitted, you're always behind it. It's always ahead of you. Finding out where it came from precisely is probably like chasing ghosts. It could have come from so many different places, and actually getting the evidence of, yes, that's where it mutated is probably physically impossible. You can get a general idea, but being precise about it, no, I don't think so. I don't think that can be done.
So get us into some of the terminology here. When viruses go from a pure pig virus or a pure bird virus to a multiple, what is that called? And explain what the terminology is when one morphs from one version to another.
Well, we have two words for this. We call it a shift in influenza. Every year we have drift. That's why we have to have, with a drift, you get tiny changes, you need a new vaccine every year. But occasionally the virus does a big jump to an entirely new virus, and that we call a shift. And the shift results in a pandemic. And that's what we've seen, and that's what we haven't seen since 1967. So we were kind of overdue for this. So they used to happen every 10 years or so, and we haven't had one for 30 years, so we really are overdue. The thing is this, the influenza virus can infect a lot of species. Basically, it's a bird virus. It's a flu virus, a zoonosis, we call it, which means it's not really a human virus. But it jumps to humans, and it jumps to pigs and to some other species. And in the other animal, it can be in the human, it can be in the bird, and be in the pig. And this has probably happened in the human. It's the most likely scenario. A single person gets infected with more than one virus at the same time. Those two viruses, which are quite different, get into the same cell. Each virus has 8 little pieces of its genome, which is an RNA genome. And when it gets in the cell, it takes its coat off and out pops its 8 little pieces. Well, if you've got 2 viruses in a cell, now you imagine yourself 16 little pieces, 8 little matching pairs, and then shuffle it like a pack of cards. And you come out with 8 and 8, and you will see that you've got some different combinations.
It reassembles in a different combination.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that is, we've got to go, doctor, but that, I actually understand that. Dalji, did you understand that? I totally understood that. That is fabulous. I mean, now I understand. So when it's in a single host, multiple viruses, that's how the mutation takes place. It's a reshuffling of RNA. Dr. Susan Fisher-Hawk, thanks so much for putting that in perspective. We're definitely going to talk to you again. She's an epidemiologist at the University of Texas School of Public Health, looking at the Mexico border from her office. She's the author of the book Level 4 Virus Hunters of the CDC. Thanks, doctor.
Thank you.
Time for very quick headlines from Femi Okan.